and it's in the breaking. We come unbound. And it's in the giving. We are found. Yeah. You can barely change.
Welcome to A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, a podcast dedicated to the telling of authentic stories and the sharing of insightful wisdom, exploring science and spirituality, medicine and Mother Nature. No topic is off limits when it comes to growing our personal understanding and supporting our collective well-being. With your host, Dr. Rob Abbott, a family medicine resident practicing spiritually focused and evolutionarily informed functional medicine, we hope to nourish your being so that you can flourish in whatever the moment has called for you to do. And I know you try.
In episode 16 of A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, we share a conversation with board-certified family medicine physician, avid runner, and community health visionary, Dr. Josh Emder. While Josh is certainly passionate about exercise and sharing his joy for running with his patients, his calling and compassionate service to others is most profoundly embedded in his unrelenting desire to improve the patient-doctor relationship and ultimately improve communities most in need. As you will hear in the podcast, Josh comes from a background and family deeply rooted in medicine. But his unique passions have brought him to pursue an alternative approach to engaging and empowering patients. Josh is one of the newest generation of practitioners practicing telemedicine-based direct primary care, a model previously outlined in episode 7 of our podcast with Dr. Spencer Nadolski. Both Josh and Spencer have partnered with SteadyMD, an organization and platform dedicated to direct primary care and engagement of patients beyond what is possible in a traditional face-to-face medical encounter. In our conversation today, Josh shares much of his background, entering the field of family medicine, and later pursuing work as a hospitalist in Boulder, Colorado. Josh shares some of his most insightful wisdom regarding the urgent need to transform healthcare delivery and revitalize the doctor-patient relationship. Together, we explore topics such as, what does it mean to be in the profession of medicine? And what is a profession in the first place? We then see, what are the most unsustainable aspects of our current medical model? And how are Josh and other physicians seeking to change the course of healthcare delivery? Getting personal, we discuss, what does a typical day look like for Josh while seeing patients as part of SteadyMD? What can patients expect as part of their partnership in working with Josh? What are the expected benefits as well as the potential downsides? Do you lose anything when seeing patients over telemedicine? Or perhaps, what are the best emerging communication modalities and health education resources that Josh is currently using to communicate and encourage patients to make sustainable lifestyle changes? And lastly, we dig into our desperate need to find space and value in a cramped and overburdened healthcare system. Why it's time to reflect, think, and further explore the personal needs of each patient, so critical, yet remarkably lacking in our current medical model. How can patients add incredible value to their healthcare and decrease total cost by partnering with a direct primary care doctor through membership-based practices? I'm incredibly grateful to Josh and all the visionary physicians and leaders at SteadyMD. As we share in the podcast, healthcare is changing, And perhaps the only choice now is to decide whether you will be swimming with it or against it. Please seek out Josh via the contact information on our podcast page and begin to explore the many avenues that perhaps you can pursue in order to partner with a direct primary care physician seeking to improve your health and the health of your community. Please, if you enjoy the podcast, we would really appreciate it if you could leave a review in iTunes or Apple Podcasts so that more listeners can engage with our mindful message. Thank you, as always, for your support, and we hope you enjoy the show. Dr. Josh, thank you for joining me today in this podcast. I'm so excited to share a conversation with you.
Thanks, Rob. Happy to be here. You're one of my first, and you're one of my podcast debuts. So thanks for having me on the show, and I hopefully I can give your listeners some, you know, valuable information.
Well, I'm always excited to have sort of new voices and new faces. I feel like that's kind of what my podcast is for. You know, surely I'll have people that have already made a name for themselves or have this massive audience. But more often than not, I like reaching out to people who have really authentic and interesting messages that otherwise, you know, aren't quite in the limelight of the Mark Hyman world, Mark Hyman of the world. So I appreciate you coming to share some of your story.
Well, yeah, great. So, I mean, for me, you know, I'm 10 years into practice. I've been working as a hospitalist, so just taking care of patients in the hospital setting ever since finishing my family practice residency. And I was really just ready for a big change. And this opportunity came to me to really kind of reinvent the patient-doctor relationship. And when I heard about it, you know, I just knew it was for me, so...
Yeah, you know, we were able to get connected through this kind of shared passion for wanting to really revamp healthcare delivery. And, you know, I was able to do a podcast with our mutual friend, Spencer Nadolski, a few weeks back. And we talked about this new platform, SteadyMD, where they were sort of taking telemedicine and direct primary care and building into this new package and offering a new service to people who were kind of done with the classic primary care model and really wanted to take charge of their health. And I think I, you know, got in touch with one of the main, you know, medical directors, and he was like, "You have to talk to Josh, you know, he's got a really amazing story and you guys will really hit it off." And so we'd love to maybe kind of start there. You already sort of prefaced a little bit of, you know, your background and how you got into this current space, but was really curious, you know, why did you even begin a career in medicine to start with?
Yeah, so that's kind of an easy place for me to start. I grew up in a medical family. My father's a physician. He's still practicing in San Diego as a pulmonologist. So, you know, I kind of grew up, you know, in the proverbial footsteps where, you know, some of my first memories were following him around the Cleveland Clinic, where I remember one day I was, let's see, 1984, so I was like 7 years old. I got lost in the hospital, and I think from that day on, like, I just was fascinated by, you know, taking care of people and kind of the lifestyle of being a doctor and really what it meant to dedicate your life to a profession.
Yeah, you know, you use that term profession, and it's something that the director at my, you know, family practice residency, the family medicine residency, which I'm a part, you know, spent a great deal of time focusing on, you know, in his mind, the difference between an occupation or work and profession, and this concept of, you know, within medicine anyway, of what is a healthcare professional. And I think I find it fascinating, this kind of envisioning this little child kind of lost in the hospital, yet at the same time completely found within a space that you would, you know, in your future soon call a training ground and home.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting that you bring that up. I've never really thought about it like that. But, you know, for me, like, I always understood, like, my dad's insane work hours. So he's a critical care pulmonologist. And you know, when he said he had to go in at the middle of the night, like, I kind of really respected that because I could tell that's what his passion was. Like, he spent all these years in school and training. And, you know, when he got that call from the hospital that someone needed to be intubated or someone was really in trouble, you know, it was in his, it was just in his DNA that as a doctor, you know, he had to go in then and he had that calling. And I always, like, even from a young age, I really respected that. On the other hand, you know, my brother and I are polar opposites, and not to say my brother didn't respect and appreciate the work that that my dad was doing, but on the same token, my brother was always like, well, you know, it kind of stinks that you're having to spend so much time at work. And, you know, in this day and age, you know, with what you brought up with, you know, healthcare professionals, I agree with you that it is different to be a healthcare professional than it has a different connotation to kind of be kind of in this system where you're labeled a healthcare professional, to be like really kind of a doctor professional where that's your identity and that's who you are.
Yeah, I see it as, you know, no matter what your beliefs are, you can't take off that badge. Whether at home, yes, you can, you know, obviously remove yourself from the hospital setting, but you're always sort of representing what it means to be a doctor or to be any other healthcare professional, you know, in this field. And people, you know, will automatically, for good or for bad, you know, respect you for that work, kind of knowing, you know, the hours and time that you've put into pursuing this career. And recognizing that you are primarily there for their wellness, and you know, we have to recognize that, you know, with, you know, there's, I guess, the very famous saying about, you know, with great sort of power and, you know, comes, you know, great responsibility, and I see as we have a responsibility to represent not just ourselves but sort of the profession as a whole, regardless of where we find ourselves,
yeah,
you know, in a hospital or at home.
That's funny that you bring that up. So here in Boulder, I have, you know, we have University of Colorado here, which is my alma mater. And part of that, of having the university, I do have quite a number of pre-med students come in and shadow me. And the one thing that I always preach to them kind of foremost is the responsibility that you really have to take as a physician. Because what I always stress is there's lots of ways to make a living out there, but to really want to be a physician and to dedicate your life to the education process and the financial obligations, you know, at the end, really what you're faced with is this massive responsibility of trying to keep your patients healthy, help them when they're sick. And that's a huge deal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really becoming even, you know, more of a big deal as we start to expand. You know, I see a great positive with the empowered, engaged patient who's, you know, reading on, you know, the internet about their disease state and wanting to learn how to best, you know, cure themselves or to just live with optimal wellness. And, you know, they're within all that information is a lot of sort of misinformation and, you know, people with agendas that might be to make a living, to make money, to become an icon. And I don't see it as malicious, and I don't see it as, you know, what primarily gets people into the healthcare field, but we have to acknowledge that there is just so much out there and take ownership of the guidance that we give and the counsel that we give to patients to not intentionally, you know, lead them potentially astray or down paths that are not ultimately going to be very beneficial. And that's something that, you know, we really have to tackle. And it's not about, you know, bashing anyone with, you know, different credentials after their name, because I'm very much a believer of just a unified a field of healthcare, but recognizing, you know, where am I strongest in my education? You know, what do I fundamentally understand? And what was I trained to do? And am I practicing within my means? And if not, Can I go find someone? Am I connected to somebody who has a different skill set that can potentially help my patient? And that, I think, is probably the best service you can do to, you know, your patient is saying, well, maybe in this situation, I don't quite know. I don't have the resources to help you, but here's someone who I think can. And directing people to the most helpful, most nourishing resources for their wellness.
Yeah, so you bring up, you know, a ton of great points. And what I'm doing here at SteadyMD is... this is called a direct primary care model of medicine, meaning that in direct primary care, there's a direct financial relationship between the patient and the doctor without the insurance company in the middle. So direct primary care, what it does by being able to partner directly with your doctor is that it improves access. And we live in just such an interesting and amazing age of technology with the internet, where everyone, well, anyone with an internet connection, has access to just so much medical information for the good and the bad. And with that, you know, it, like you were saying, it gives patients, it empowers patients to have, you know, in lots of information. But if they don't have access to a medical professional or someone educated to actually help filter their information, it can cause some real problems. And I'm sure you've seen that in your own practice already, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, you know, like I said, it's none of it's been malicious. It's just been, you know, sort of a combination of misinformation, and a lot of times it's a lot of financial stress and burden and just anxiety from the patients who are trying things that realistically, yes, might have had some very minor benefit or could have potentially, you know, given them a degree of restored wellness, but in the grand scope of things was very nearsighted to the bigger issues. And I just, you know, people get in these states of relative desperation. And I think people can inadvertently, you know, physicians and healthcare professionals can inadvertently feed off of that desperation and end up not serving the true interest of their patients. And we have to both, from both sides, sort of take pause and reflect on, you know, where are we at right now, and realize that in states of sort of, you know, desperation, or as a physician kind of coming in, you know, maybe wanting to make a name for yourself or you know, practice in a different way, we have to realize that we might stray from our initial values unintentionally and always have to be mindful to come back to this middle ground. Yeah. So there's, you know, intentions on both sides that need to be involved.
And, you know, what really gets me is, you know, right now, you know, politically, you know, with like all repeal of ACA, and healthcare reform, no one really talks about insurance reform. And, you know, with that, you know, in our current system, healthcare accounts for 18% of our gross domestic product, which is just totally unsustainable. And healthcare is too expensive. And even if you are fortunate enough to have insurance, you're probably on a high deductible plan like I am, where my family deductible is $6,000, and if I want to make an appointment to see my doctor to discuss something that I read on the internet, I know that, you know, I'll probably have to wait a couple months to get in to see him. I'll get there, you know, I'll have to pay my out-of-pocket deductible and co-pays. And once I even get to see him, he's probably so rushed because he has, you know, a panel of 2,000 to 3,000 patients. And he's spending half his time doing documentation that he doesn't really have time to sit down with me and kind of address, you know, my questions and really critically review, you know, whatever, you know, literature, or whatever readings I may have found on the internet. So what I'm finding with this current model that I'm practicing in with direct primary care, since I'm not having to check boxes for the sake of checking boxes because the insurance companies require this to be done in order to get compensated for a visit, I'm actually able to focus on my patient instead of all the other stuff that the corporate machine has kind of just forced down doctors' throats as, you know, these are the hoops you need to jump through.
Yeah, and, you know, I would really love to maybe get a little granular and sort of ask you and just share with the audience, you know, what does a typical day look like for you in seeing patients if you're not checking off the boxes or spending all this time having to, you know, search through an electronic health record or navigate, you know, billing codes? You know, what does an average day look like for you in terms of seeing patients?
Yeah, so I can say I have a lot more time for, you know, research and shared decision making. So with what we do in our platform is we have a messaging app that's completely HIPAA secure where my patients can, you know, reach out to me and, you know, send me links, send me articles, and it's asynchronous, meaning that, you know, they can send me something. I can't promise that I'll read it right after they send it to me. But, you know, when I have, you know, when I sit down, you know, I can actually read it and then, you know, call them on the phone or start a video conference, actually kind of discuss it. And, you know, this stuff doesn't really take a lot of time. You know, it's pretty easy to do. You know, I can read an article. I can reply via text message and say, hey, you know, I agree with this. You know, maybe listen to this podcast or, you know, read this article. And you can just start like a whole stream of really great information where, you know, you can, again, you can have that shared decision making where the clinic model is just not set up for communication like that.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about it quite a bit. And, you know, I am, as we've kind of discussed off of the show and as I've discussed with Spencer and other folks in this platform, you know, I recognize there's no way I would be able to practice outside of anything but a sort of direct primary care membership type model because, you know, I recognize the huge need for time, you know, outside of the direct patient interaction to really support them and to do research, to compile, you know, a treatment plan, a wellness plan specifically for them. And I recognize, you know, in the current model, when you're so strapped for time and all you have in that extra time, in that administrative time, is to document.
Yeah. I mean, sorry to interrupt.
All we can give is a cookie cutter.
No, sorry to interrupt, but like, there's multiple studies that just address that really, that have shown that doctors spend 50% of their time doing administrative charting and not direct patient care time. I mean, half the time, half of my day working in the hospital is really just doing documentation.
Yeah, and that's terrifying to me in terms of, you know, and I don't think patients, you know, the public fully realizes that sort of that burden of work that's happening, you know, outside of the patient interaction. You know, I'm not, you know, blaming anyone, but it's easy for patients to get frustrated. Like, where is the doctor? They haven't, where are they coming to see me? And recognizing that, you know, a lot of that outside time is, you know, one, obviously seeing other patients, but two, you know, doing all this documentation. And, you know, when you bring it to the clinic setting as well, there's no way we can expect, you know, physicians to give individualized, you know, treatment plans to patients because they just don't have the space and time to be able to provide that. And so that's where, you know, the model of, you know, a drug for a disease or, you know, this collection of symptoms equals this pathology. Therefore, let me, you know, give you these drugs and these are the tests I should run. You know, we have to have that sort of degree of, I'm using air quotes, efficiency in order to operate to get through the day. But it makes no room for individualization of the patient experience. And to me, that's a huge, huge problem.
Yeah. So a really interesting thing that I read recently was like an article put out by the Brookings Institute. And the title was something like, why is healthcare the only field that hasn't gained efficiencies by leveraging technology? And I think that's just so interesting because you would think with all this electronic medical records and all the technology that, you know, doctors could actually have more time to spend with their patients. But when I really thought about it, you know, the electronic medical records they're like tools that have been created by the insurance companies to accomplish certain goals of documentation to meet certain requirements, whether they're like the paid per performance metrics of, you know, I'm sure you're aware, Rob, of like, you know, like with diabetics, you know, checking A1C every 3 months to make sure that they're at goal, blood pressure goals, all that kind of stuff. So a typical primary care doctor in an office is so busy having to check all these boxes to make sure that he's meeting all the performance metrics, which albeit are good things, that medical record was never really meant to provide a solution for doctors to be able to provide better care for their patients in a meaningful way. I mean, sure, better care by making sure that they're accomplishing certain goals for chronic disease management, but is that really what's improving the patient experience? And I would argue that's not really where it's at. It's not, people are not numbers, but I mean, people, you know, human beings, we need that human connection with our healthcare provider. You know, if I tell one of my diabetic patients who isn't engaged in their health that, oh, your hemoglobin A1C is not at goal, it's 8, you know, they'll leave that visit and be like, well, my hemoglobin A1C is not at goal, but whatever, you know, they aren't going to really make change. But if mm-hmm. you can really have a meaningful relationship with that patient and you can attempt to change their lifestyle, that's how you can improve health, you know, on a nationwide community basis. Let me take that back, on a community basis and extend that out into a national level.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, I was just sitting here thinking about, you know, you bring up these checklists and things that, you know, get put in place and checking hemoglobin A1Cs and, you know, diabetic foot exams and these things for diabetics. And I find it interesting, like, to me that for most family doctors, those are the least of my worries about them forgetting. You know, they're very good at doing all of those labs. And the fact that we need a, you know, checklist and reminder, it is sort of a level of security, so to speak. But those aren't the things I'm worried about them not doing. What if we made checklists to think of like nutritional deficiencies? Or did I have a conversation about what their diet it really is like for more than 5 minutes at one of my visits? And what if we made a whole new pay for performance, you know, checklist, and, you know, obviously wanting to stay within evidence-based, you know, guidelines, but sort of thinking about like, what if we made a new checklist, you know, that had things that you don't normally do? And I sort of like find that like interesting, like, let me remind myself of the things that I'm not normally doing, because, you know what? I don't need the reminder to check the hemoglobin A1C realistically. Like, why is that a metric? Like, that's like, you know, the physicians across the board are pretty dang efficient and capable of doing those things. So why are we like focusing on the things that are so kind of fundamental?
Yeah. And the thing that we aren't focusing on, and it's the thing that you brought up first, is what it means to be a doctor, what it is to be part of the profession, of a healing profession. You know, it's not checking boxes. It's not doing certain things because an insurance company is requiring it of you. What it really is, it's about that doctor-patient relationship, which is, it's just going down the tubes, pardon a better term, you know? Like, as healthcare is getting more and more complex and specialized, and it's with that complexity, it's just becoming less personalized. And I'm trying to take that back.
Yeah. And I think you're doing, you know, and partnering with a group that's really incredibly passionate about doing so. And we kind of got a little bit into, you know, what a day in the life of, you know, Dr. Josh looks like. And would love to maybe expand, you know, even further in terms of, you know, one visit with a patient. You know, what will that encounter look like, you know, over the computer?
Yeah.
And then maybe this can lead us into, you know, what are the relative pros and cons of a telemedicine interface in terms of developing that personal relationship?
Yeah. So today I had a new patient who found me using Google. He typed in like a online doctor and found me. And with SteadyMD, my practice is primarily for runners, but as a primary care doctor, I'm, you know, more than happy to, you know, manage chronic conditions and take care of non-runners as well. So this patient today was not a runner, but he was a 20-something who has really been dealing with some issues. He's had, you know, chronic back pain for the past 6 years after an injury that he had when he was lifeguarding. You know, he was having some problems with migraines. So, you know, with this visit, you know, the first part, it's a video conference are, you know, most of my onboarding visits are at least an hour, but, you know, right now, you know, I'm not really watching the clock. I have a lot more time than I had in the hospital. So, you know, got to know each other, video chat, got a real detailed past medical history, surgical history, medications, allergies, stuff that typically my a medical assistant would take. But in this platform, since it's more personal and I have the time, you know, I'm really kind of diving in there and getting a complete history. And, you know, we attempt to get their past medical history, their previous records. So we have those and previous labs. And, you know, after getting a history, really the next step is kind of addressing kind of the main reasons for their visit. And, you know, the visit today, like I said, you know, some back pain, which is one of the more common things in primary care. And, you know, dealing with his, you know, with migraine prophylaxis. So, you know, we were able to address those. I was able to give him a prescription for a medication for prophylaxis. And unfortunately, this patient is really aware of the opioid crisis in this country. And he was expressing to me how dissatisfied he was with the current system, where he's seen multiple doctors for his back pain, where people have just wanted to push opiates on him, which is one thing that in my SteadyMD practice, we definitely can't do. So it was really refreshing to have a young patient who is having pain that's decreasing his function, but really wanted to try an alternative approach. So, you know, I gave him some tips, and I'm actually referring him to a physiatrist in his area, which is actually a friend of mine from medical school who I have a lot of respect for. And I know he's done some really great non-operative spine care for some of my patients. He's also a DO like myself. So I'm hoping that he can maybe do some osteopathic manipulation for him. But even after kind of the main part of the visit, you know, I was able to set up using our SteadyMD app, I was able to set up multiple different chat channels for him where we could start just a bunch of different streams on different topics. And a luxury that you have with this setting of virtual care is, you know, when you're in the clinic and you're pressed for time, or even if you aren't pressed for time, sometimes when you're in the room with the patient, you can't really come up with your best ideas for how to treat a problem. So exactly. Actually after the visit ended was really when I was able to, you know, bring up, you know, I was able to post to his app, you know, some other, you know, pretty big, you know, pretty great lifestyle suggestions that, you know, I hope he finds valuable and, you know, uses those to really make some changes in his life.
You bring up such a great point. I mean, this day and age when you're seeing patients, you know, the numbers of patients that some of the family docs that the clinic that where I am a resident, you know, I think about like that, those encounters in the room, and I'm sure there's plenty of situations where that, and in the moment you can't completely think of everything that you want to provide the patient, and it isn't until later, maybe in another patient encounter, when suddenly, you know, a light bulb goes off, like, oh duh, that like article or, you know, that resource or those exercises would have really been good for, you know, patient X, and but oh, now I have some barrier to even being able to get them, you know, get that information to them. And even with sort of the patient portals that are built into some of these EMRs, it's just, you know, the barriers to sort of that direct communication and the time that you're able to, you know, to give is kind of compromised. And so I think it's just, I mean, that's such a real practical moment that I think, you know, some of the physicians and, you know, anyone in healthcare listening right now probably like, oh yes, I've had that happen to me so many times, and it's so frustrating that I can't kind of have that follow-up or, you know, and closure slash continuation with the patient.
Yeah, because of the restraints with this patient today, you know, he brought up one thing that, you know, at the beginning of the visit when I was just getting to know him, I didn't really feel comfortable calling him out on, like, you know, for example, you know, I was asking about caffeine intake, and he was saying that, you know, his vice is, you know, a big gulp a day, which is, you know, a very common thing that we hear from our patients. And, you know, when you're first meeting someone, it's kind of hard to say, hey, you shouldn't have a big gulp a day. That's, you know, 400 calories and 40 grams of sugar. But, you know, after the encounter, you know, I was able to kind of give him a checklist of things to work on that he actually has, you know, in his smartphone that he can look at every day and say, oh, you know, my doctor did say that maybe instead of that big gulp for my caffeine, maybe I should just have a cup of tea or a great, you know, cup of coffee without sugar, you know, like, and I'm sure you remember this as a med student, you know, as a med student, like I kind of was like, really, do I have to like say like, don't smoke? And I had like an attending say to me, of course, like as a doctor, like that's your only chance. Like that might be the only time someone touches that healthcare professional has an opportunity to touch that patient to say, hey, this isn't good for you. Maybe you should make a change. And, you know, with the whole lifestyle change model, like that's important to just hear the stuff over and over and over again, even if the patient isn't ready and they're in that pre-contemplation stage of lifestyle change. It's good to just, it's so important for patients to just hear that.
Yeah. And I love that point. You know, I know personally in my life, it took for, you know, I'm just throwing out numbers here, but probably like the 30th or 40th time for kind of somebody or something, you know, in my life to come up and say, hey, look, you need to slow down. And maybe there's something to yoga and meditating and getting really quiet. And it just took multiple times hearing that till finally amidst other sort of aspects of my life that really hit home. And I was like, I need to make this change. And we will never know if something we're saying to somebody is the first time they've heard it or the 150th time. And we won't know what time might finally put them over that threshold to say, I'm going to make a change. And so you're right. And on one hand, there's sort of this, you know, this duty, but you know, with that duty as well to be authentic about it and to not just give it sort of lip service, and recognize that really you just will never know where a patient might be at. And maybe it is that 150th time that finally puts it over the, you know, the edge. And maybe you can be that person to give that advice.
Yeah. And I liked the fact that it's actually in writing because they have it, you know, as a text message, you know, in their app, which I think, we'll see since, I mean, this platform's new to me, but I'm hoping that this could actually be more powerful than just that one time, oh, my doctor told me I shouldn't do this.
You know, it's maybe kind of silly, but I'm just sitting here. You know, you could totally play on this. And, you know, your last name is Emder. I think of it as, you know, something that's enduring instead of you know, playing with the word enduring, these enduring tips for wellness and just having that checklist and constantly, you know, reminding people it's sort of this, it is this enduring, you know, presence way beyond just the spoken word. It's something that they're carrying around.
Yeah. But well, if
you could totally play with that.
If you think about it, Rob, I mean, the technology is there to just do the push notifications for whatever it is you want to remind your patients for. So, you know, just set up a reminder, hey, don't do that today, or take your blood pressure today, or so. I think there's, you know, lots of really, really neat tools that can be used to help promote lifestyle change and healthy living.
And you know, I know this is kind of a newer platform for you, a newer space, but was curious if in these sort of first few patient encounters and as you've gotten started, how you felt you've been able to connect with your patients, and has there been any detraction from not being sort of physically present with a patient in terms of the bond and the therapeutic relationship?
Yeah. So that is the biggest, that's the biggest critique of this virtual primary care. And there's lots of things that do need an exam, but there's also lots of things that don't. So I'm hoping that with my virtual practice, that the benefit of having direct access to me as their doctor far outweighs the negatives of not having me there in person to physically examine them. So, some examples of that, women's well visits, you know, that's something that, you know, we'll just have to refer out to, you know, a local gynecologist or primary care doctor. In some ways, you know, I think SteadyMD can work really well for patients who may already have a primary care doctor, but one that they just can't get in to see very easily. It works well with, you know, patients who, you know, maybe just go to urgent cares for convenience, but don't have that medical home to really help orchestrate their care and their health. So, in life, I've kind of realized that there's nothing perfect. You have to take the good with the bad. And from my experience so far, I really think I can probably do more good.
Yeah, I think the added value of your service, you know, far outweighs and trumps any of these, you know, kind of, potential cons or, you know, downsides that we bring up. And I was just actually thinking about it today. You know, I see, you know, SteadyMD in the direct primary care sort of telemedicine relationship, potentially working very well with people who want to continue in the traditional primary care model. And perhaps, you know, you can partner with a local doc. And so your patient can actually, you know, join, be part of a membership practice and pay membership fees. And as part of that membership, they get one wellness visit at the sort of direct primary care or at the, you know, the traditional primary care office, and they can go in and they can receive their immunization if they need it, or receive, you know, a pap smear or the well woman visit at that, you know, that time. And, or maybe they, you know, you, in the agreement, they get two acute care visits that if they need a, you know, a strep swab or, you know, some sort of service that you're not going to be able to physically do, or even in a direct primary care service that's, you know, in person, you may not carry those sort of supplies in a traditional office, but partner with a local physician and who can provide those and build it into whatever membership model that you have. And I mean, some people might say, well, that's kind of micromanaging, and then, you know, one doctor feels like they're not engaging. But I feel like, you know, collectively, if people agree that they're invested in someone's wellness, and maybe the traditional doctor recognizes that they don't have all the time necessarily, and that you're going to be a team in this relationship, I see that as potentially a way to, like you said, kind of help people get all the services that they, you know, realistically need to kind of fill in any potential gaps that get lost if you're just doing sort of a direct primary telemedicine model.
Yeah, I mean, as a family practice resident, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir when I say, you know, primary care is really the building block for a healthy population. And care is just getting more and more fragmented, that it's hard for even, you know, it's really hard for anyone to be able to navigate the system. And unless they really have an advocate and a, you know, I'd argue a primary care doctor kind of orchestrating, you know, what it is that they actually need once they get into the world of kind of specialty care and hospital care and, you know, expensive procedures. So, you know, with direct primary care, a thing that I hear pretty often is, you know, equating it to concierge practice. Is that something you're familiar with, Rob?
I've heard that term, and I've sort of equated it more with kind of the skimming off the top sort of model of, I'll let you, you know, and bill insurance and then take some more money, and that kind of getting a negative connotation.
Yeah, so my feeling is concierge really belong in hotels, like hotel lobbies, like kind of telling people where they should go.
That's and, a good point.
You know, have dinner and get some show tickets. But, you know, over the past, you know, 15 years, concierge medicine has been equated with the wealthy who are paying more to have a doctor on retainer. Concierge practices come in lots of different flavors where, you know, some, I'd say, I don't know the percentage, but a lot of them still bill insurance companies, but they are able to have a smaller panel of patients. And some do not. And really, with direct primary care, in a way, it's kind of a rebranding of concierge medicine, where the hope is to have a reasonable monthly fee that really anyone can afford. And at the end of the day, paired with a high deductible insurance plan, can actually save everyone money and improve access and provide better care. So I think that's something that, you know, is really important to stress to your listeners that, you know, sure, with what I'm doing at SteadyMD is, you know, $79 a month, But if you pair that with a high deductible plan, you can actually have a lot more value of having access to a doctor who knows you and understands your lifestyle and your activities than, you know, having, you know, a fancy insurance plan that still has a high deductible where you still don't have great access to your doctor. And with that access comes that personal relationship, which I just feel is so important to keep people healthy. And, you know, a great example of that, I was recently on a panel for a startup week, and it was a panel discussion about companies that are innovating in the healthcare space. And someone brought up, and not to belittle their work, but it was, you know, someone mentioned a company that's redesigning the hospital gown. And, you know, with that gown, it has some features that help decrease incidence of hospital delirium, which is a big problem. But at the end of the day, like, I view something like that as something that's really just increasing complexity without really fixing the fundamental problem of having a personal relationship with your doctor.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, it sounds like a very kind of sexy idea of this gown that can, you know, I'm sure, like, measure, like, all these interesting parameters, and it sounds like really novel and exciting, but at the end of the day, you're right, is it really serving the interest of the patient? And
well, you know, like, the hospital is going to bill the insurance company, like, who knows how many hundreds if not thousands of dollars for that gown, which albeit that gown, you know, could be very effective, and sure, it could, you know, decrease mortality with special sensors to, you know, detect sepsis earlier and have, like, puzzles on it to decrease delirium and, you know, have, like, a Velcro closure on the back so your loved one's rear end isn't hanging out when they're walking down the hall. I mean, those are all great things. But in this day and age, we are able to, you know, create and make all these great things, but at the end of the day, someone actually has to pay for them. And right now, society is having to pay for all these added complexities.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, back to the beginning of this conversation, this idea of community, and realizing we all are invested in each other's health. We don't necessarily think about it because money just kind of disappears from our paycheck, but, you know, our taxes and things, we're, you know, we are one collective community, one collective nation.
We are,
you know, paying for each other's wellness, and we should see that and recognize we have an incentive to decrease that total cost burden. And
that 18% of GDP, I mean, 18%, crazy.
Yeah, it's, I mean, unfathomable the amount of money that's spent. And, you know, we need an operating system that will actually incentivize decreasing costs. And I think, you know, direct primary care and this community level engagement is where we have to start. And like you said, not to belittle the gown with all these gadgets, but that's not going to solve that problem. And, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, was kind of curious, you have had a lot of, you know, history and work at the community level, you know, where you're at and, you know, what you've been able to do even while being a hospitalist. And was really curious if you could share some of, you know, your work at, you know, within your community and at that level and where you see that going now that you're in kind of a new direct primary care model.
Yeah. So, my wife's also a physician, so we, are full on medical family, and, we moved out to Colorado from San Diego. She's a specialist, so it was a little bit harder for her to find a good job fit than for me when we first moved out. So when we came out to Boulder, I'm huge into the mountains and kind of outdoor adventure sports and running. I'm a huge runner. So Boulder was a great fit. I was happy that my wife found such a great place to work. So when I moved out here, I initially was planning on opening up my own primary care practice, but that was back in 2008 when kind of the writing was on the wall. That was right when kind of most primary care practices were being bought by corporations and hospital systems. And right there, I knew that I didn't want to be an outpatient doctor who was employed. And the main reason for that was kind of the lack of autonomy and knowing that you would be kind of beholden to an organization to practice kind of in their model, in their form. So I was, shortly after moving here, I was offered a hospital medicine position, and I had a lot of hospital medicine experience through my residency. So, you know, I took it in 2008, and meanwhile, you know, we had a family. I have a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, and, you know, snap of the fingers, and 9 years had passed, and I was, you know, still doing the same hospital medicine job. And I didn't really know, like that, like I said, that job kind of fell into my lap. And meanwhile, as a hospitalist, one of the big advantages of it is, you know, one, it's exciting work. It's very intellectually stimulating because you're dealing with, you know, the sickest of the sick. And so lots of, it can be really satisfying when a patient comes in really sick and you know exactly what to do and you have, you know, see them walk out of the hospital a couple of days later, like from a life-threatening infection or a heart attack. And another advantage is that it's shift work. So you kind of go in, you do your shift, you clock in, clock out, not literally yet, but I think pretty soon they'll have doctors hitting a time clock. And what's nice is, With the shift work, like it's really intense when you're there, but when you're off shift, you could decompress. But being a doctor and having that identity of being a doctor and living in kind of a smaller town, like Boulder, Colorado is not a small town, but it's not a huge place where, you know, I walk around and my identity is still that of a doctor where, you know, my friends or people who I've like, say someone, like I'll go for a trail run and I'll meet up with an acquaintance on the trail and all of a sudden they're asking me medical questions. I always kind of take that as, some doctors are annoyed when kind of acquaintances or friends reach out to them for advice, but I'm always kind of flattered by it because again, that's who I am. And I went into this to, you know, try to learn and to help people as cheesy as that sounds. But with this new kind of platform, I feel like I'm able to do that now, but do it officially where I have a medical record where I can be like a doctor friend, if you will, for my community. And that community, you know, in the virtual sense, you know, isn't really geographic, but it's people who, you know, want to identify themselves as one of my patients and part of a practice, a primary care practice for runners.
Yeah, I mean, I find it just, I've had this discussion with a few of other sort of individuals on this podcast, is this, you know, idea of, I call it the blessings and the curses of technology. And I see, you know, we have this, I think, and this is just my opinion, this great need, but at the same time, a great lack of true supportive communities. And while, yes, I love and put so much effort into my local community, my church community, kind of in person, I see there's a vast untapped sort of social network and social community and these sort of virtual communities where we can all connect over shared beliefs and really support each other. And I was kind of blown away by sort of been a part of Spencer Nadolski's, you know, original kind of Facebook group and seeing the support that was created there and just thinking about the people that I've been connected with and doing these podcasts and, you know, over these shared values that I haven't even met and, you know, met with in person. And it's all been sort of virtual, and it has given me so much energy and inspiration and strength. And I just see that as like, that is using the power of these virtual communities for so much good. And for people to remove themselves from these isolating islands, feeling like they're so alone and their pain and their suffering is totally just within their world. And I see that as a great, great power. And you know, a lot of people, you know, I guess poo-poo or just put down some of the struggles that can come from interacting in the sort of virtual world. But I see that as just like there's so much potential there and just have seen it work so far in a few of these settings to really help people. And I see that as something that you're going to grow with your patient base as you go forward.
Yeah. So one thing that I thought was interesting was, you know, I've heard some people say, well, I like to go see my doctor. And I was talking to some of my friends about that. And I still don't know many people who actually go really enjoy taking time off work to actually go in and see their doctor. But someone said something to me that was really interesting, saying like, well, hey, I bet when Jeff Bezos was starting Amazon, I'm sure someone told him, well, I like to go to the bookstore. And it's really just kind of a changing of mindset. I mean, you're totally right where your community doesn't. I don't think your community is geographic anymore. We live in a world now where your community can, you know, span the world with technology, and it's hard for people to embrace change, but change is coming. Change is here.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, I mean, of all the people I've talked to, you know, people in my generation, they resonate with the direct primary care membership model. You know, growing up with paying for a monthly fee for Netflix and a monthly fee for XYZ, whatever, like, and then you describe the idea of the access and the availability and the communication and the sort of the relationship with this physician who you otherwise probably wouldn't see in a traditional setting. You know, I've described that to, you know, people in my generation. They're like, that makes perfect sense and is exactly what I would like from a physician. And I see that as being a catalyst. I mean, it resonates with so many people. And that's, like you said, that's change happening right now, whether we sort of, you know, realize it or not. And we need sort of champions like yourself to, I think, push that and carry that space forward, you know, recognizing that truly, this is, I think, the direction to, you know, to best help and serve our communities and best help serve our nation as a whole to get out of this, you know, tremendous debt load that we have from these healthcare costs and the burden of healthcare right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, one of the most kind of frustrating examples of inefficiencies in healthcare, you know, happened sometime within the last decade. But Rob, are you familiar with what happened with the cardiologists, why all the cardiologists end up being employed by the corporate machines?
I'm not entirely sure. I think, you know, you're kind of getting at like they were the money makers for most hospitals, like the cardiac cath labs and things, but curious where you're going with this.
Yeah. So with part of, I think it was part of ACA where, the reimbursement for cardiologists to do like nuclear stress tests and echoes in their office was cut by so much that they were losing money on the tests. At the same time, the law allowed hospitals to bill those tests at a much higher rate. So all of a sudden, a nuclear stress test that used to cost $500 if you paid your local cardiologist. If it was done in their office, it was $500. If it was done at the hospital using their kind of facility codes, it would be billed out at $5,000. So oh, wow. with this,
crazy.
With this, it drove cardiologists to be employed by hospitals because it made financial sense. And part of that was, you know, the whole idea of pushing doctors into an employed model so they lose their autonomy. And this isn't conspiracy theory. This is what really happened. I mean, Google it. But yeah. Stuff like this happens all the time, and it just makes no sense to me. And as a very value-minded consumer and individual, you know, I got to a point where I just didn't want to be a cog in that machine anymore.
Yeah, you know, I think the Freakonomics guys are probably sitting here so, like, it's all about incentives.
It's all about incentives. Stuff. You know, change is going to take some time. But I'm thinking that the current system is totally going to have to break.
I want to honor
and implode
the
before
rest
we
of
get real change.
Your evening and your time, and I've been really grateful for you to be on the podcast so far. And perhaps, you know, we've been maybe a tad bit sort of negative in the podcast. I potentially have been a little more negative, and would love to kind of, you know, end on the a very positive note. and would be really curious to hear, like, from in your own words, having been sort of in the traditional system, but you know, also worked with and been a medical educator, you know, what would be sort of your advice or kind of a final words of wisdom for young doctors like myself or young, you know, medical trainees or anyone wanting to get into medicine? You know, what would you say to those individuals right now?
Yeah, I would say that the healthcare profession is the most rewarding profession there is, as far as being able to go in and really make impacts on other human beings and really be able to help people and help guide them to health. There's not a whole lot of other professions that I can think of where you can really have that effect. So just kind of, if as long as you're able to accept that responsibility and that challenge, you know, it just provides such a rewarding career.
It's really refreshing to hear that message, and you know, in an age when I feel like there's more doctors saying, "Please don't go into medicine." It's a helpless sort of, you know, or hopeless kind of a space. And to hear that from you, I think it's incredibly encouraging.
But then the next thing to study is to study value, and you know, high value care, and that's 2 years ago I became the medical director of an observation unit at our hospital, and that was really my mission, was to improve the value. So improving outcomes at a lower cost. And really the core of that is to not order tests that aren't going to change your management. Don't do things just because it's protocol or it's what you do. I mean, do it if it's going to affect your care. And before you order anything or before you recommend a referral or procedure, just take a minute and think, what is the value in this? And I think if the medical professionals all start thinking this way on a value-based, what does this test actually cost and what value are we going to get from that price? It will affect care and it will change things.
I completely and entirely agree. And you know, my response to people who would say, "Well, I don't know what that test costs," well, I say, "Well, let's go figure it out."
Yeah.
And start from there. So, well, Josh, thank you again. Like I said, so much for sharing this space, and I'm so hopeful for all the patients that you're going to see, both, you know, runners and non-runners, and just really appreciative that you're willing to kind of take a leap of faith and try something new, knowing that, you know, in your heart that, you know, this is sort of, you know, so right for, you know, your community and for our nation moving forward. So thank you.
Oh, and Rob, thanks to you. And, you know, thank you for going into family medicine. I mean, it for last I checked, family medicine is back on the up with more medical school graduates matriculating into family medicine residencies. So that's, you know, I'm really happy to hear that. So good for you. You know, I'm fully supportive of your decision to pursue family medicine and try to, you know, have the mission of keeping your community healthy. That's what it's all about.
Well, thank you. And, I guess before, you know, we finally close, how can people, you know, get in touch with you and sort of follow you in terms of your work going forward?
Yeah. So, please take some time to check out my website. It's www.steadymd.com/running. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle's steadymdrunning. I'm pretty available on Facebook and also steadymdrunning at Instagram as well. So, you know, part of this new community is really embracing social media. So it's the modern thing.
It is. And I'm figuring it out just, you know, just like everybody else. And so We'll definitely have, you know, those links and things in our notes. And yeah, guys, please reach out to Dr. Josh to connect with him and, you know, perhaps be a patient. And even if you're not into running, maybe you'll start running. Maybe Josh will convince you from all the joy in his life from being out on the trail. So thanks again, Josh. And hopefully we'll be able to kind of cross paths and physical form at some point in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great, Rob.
A pleasure. So, well, until next time, have a wonderful evening and I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for your presence and willingness to receive a new narrative, a passionate perspective, and perhaps a deeper sense of connection with our collective purpose. Please share this podcast with any and all that you believe will benefit from its intention to relieve one's doing and engage one's being. Please share your comments about the conversation on our podcast page and leave a review in iTunes so that the voices in this space can spread to all ears ready to receive it. Music credit goes to Dillingham for their song Vessel. Remain open, stay curious, and forever be love.